Well, as I get all this turned on, let me say good evening. And you're going to be relieved and excited to know that we figured out what most of the problems were. One, where there was a dead outlet. That's been fixed. Two, there was a bad cord with a short in it. And I've got someone who's going to hold that. Matter of fact, tonight's going to look like a three-ring circus. Because Brother Morris is here, Kyle's going to come up and help me. And by God's grace, we'll actually see some pictures of this. And so let's see how this works out tonight. Aren't you glad I said most of the problems? That's you, Morris. But you know what? I think that may be as good as it's going to get. Take your Bible and turn with me to the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 33. And, that looks good when it gets brighter. Maybe by the weekend we'll be able to locate a cord that will fix that up and it'll be as bright as it could be and should be. Two items that I want you to think about tonight. First of all, several weeks ago I was at a place speaking about missions, and someone said, I just hate it when someone talks about missions because it's always kind of like a bawling out. And I hope that that's not what it's going to be tonight, because I'm here to say that we want to thank you. Thank you for your support, for your prayers, for your interest. Do you know how many people have talked to me about Zama and Pam and little Zach? It's so encouraging that you know their names and that you know what they've been through. And so tonight, I hope it's not a time when you're going to say, wow, I feel bad about missions. I hope it's a time when you say, isn't it exciting to see what I'm doing on the mission field? And so two things that I want us to keep in our mind tonight. One is the idea of a watchman. What's the job of a watchman? And the other one is the idea of a willing unknown. The Bible has much to say about willing unknowns, and we want to look at both of these subjects and turn with me to Ezekiel chapter 33. And tonight we're going to read beginning in verse 1. Ezekiel chapter 33, verse 1 says, again, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, speak to the children of my people and say unto them, when I bring the sword upon a land, if the people of the land take a man of their borders and set him for their watchman, if when he sees the sword come upon the land, he blows the trumpet and warns the people, then whosoever heareth the sound of the trumpet and takes not warning that the sword come, and if he and take him away, his blood shall be upon his own head. He heard the sound of the trumpet. He took not warning. His blood shall be upon him. But he that taketh warning shall deliver his soul. But if the watchman sees the sword come and blows not the trumpet, and the people be not warned, if the sword come and take any person from among them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at the watchman's hand. So thou, O son of man, I have set thee a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore thou shalt bear the word of my mouth and warn them from me. And when I say unto the wicked, O wicked man, thou shalt surely die, if thou dost not speak to warn the wicked from his way, that wicked person shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at thy hand. The very last song that we sang reminds me so much of this idea. We're a watchman. And our job is to let people know that there's salvation in Jesus Christ. And you see, we're not responsible to have people actually come to Christ. Our job is just to warn people concerning Christ and concerning salvation. And so I think that's really the job that we can be involved in, not just when you're overseas, but as well here at home. We could all be watchmen. We could all be sounding forth the warning of judgment and of the fact that sin can be forgiven through the shed blood of Jesus Christ. The year was 1812, and a man by the name of Adoniram Judson left America, first American missionary, as a matter of fact, left America, was turned away from India, and because he was turned away from India, he ended up in Burma. Never intended to go to Burma. But Mr. Judson was an expert in Greek and in Hebrew and in Latin as well as English. And when he landed in Burma, through almost, you'd say, a set of circumstances just so completely bizarre that it was almost incredible. It had to be the hand of God. Well, he began to study Burmese. Now, one of the unique things about the country of Burma is that there's 136 people groups, and there's 146 different languages. Can you imagine that? So some people groups have more than one language. Zama speaks seven languages. English is his worst. From time to time, around our table, we say, okay, what in the world did he just say? And he kind of puts several languages together. But Mr. Judson studied Burmese 12 hours a day. And at the end of 11 or 12 years, he began to translate the Bible from Greek and Hebrew into Burmese. Before he was completely done, it would take him 30-some years. Matter of fact, from 1812, for almost 7 years, in 7 years as a missionary, he saw one single convert. Well, that'd be encouraging, wouldn't it? I mean, if you were someone who was supporting missions, you'd say, wow, we got to help Judson out because he's so effective. Is that what you'd say? Matter of fact, during that time, for 17 months, he was in prison. And first of all, he said, I began to feel sorry for myself because every night, just before they would close the door for the evening, they would come in and they had a long pole and they would lock him and the other prisoners and they would put their hands together, lock them around their wrists and their feet together, and they would hang there all night. And when they came in the morning, they would simply cut the cords and they'd flop down to the floor. And he says sometimes it would take him 15, 20, 30 minutes before he could actually get his body into a shape where he could begin to move around before he went up to do his hard labor. And after several months of that, he began to realize, because one night he heard the rats. And he began to realize, wow, you know what? By God's grace, every night they're hanging me up here. They think they're torturing me, and they're sparing my life, because otherwise those rats are so big they'd eat me. And from that time on, he said, it turned around his whole ministry. He began to thank God for every single thing that happened to him, even being put in prison. And at the end of I think it was 23 years, Mr. Judson had lost all four of his children. He lost his first wife. He married another missionary whose husband died. And a year or two later, he lost her. You might think he would be discouraged. He continued on serving the Lord. And it's his translation of the Burmese Bible that we use even to this hour. By the time he died, I mean, it was incredible, because for a long time he didn't have more than 12 converts. Matter of fact, he would sign his letters, "A failure as a servant of God." That's where he looked at himself. But by the time he was done, 8,000 converts had come to Christ. 100 churches, small churches, had been planted all over Burma as a result of a man who got to Burma by accident. Wouldn't you like to be him in the coming day? You know what I'd say is? I'd say he's a watchman, wouldn't you? No matter what happened, he just kept sending out the message. He built a little bamboo hut, and he'd go up in the hut, and they do this in those countries, and he'd yell, "Ho, anyone that thirsts for knowledge, anyone who thirsts for information," and he did it in Burmese, and he said, for the most part, people are indifferent, and from time to time, people would stop to argue, and he did that for years before he got his first convert. That's the only way he had to make a convert. Would you do that? You see, he was a watchman. There's another thing, and I want you to turn to Nehemiah chapter 11. And I want you to keep in mind, because as we look at Burma tonight, I'm not going to share everything with you concerning Burma, although you might think so, because I have about 80 slides or 80 pictures I want to go through and then a video. I know you don't think I can do it, but every 15 seconds, if you shut your eyes, you're going to miss out. But here's the world's 10 worst dictators. And you know that the current general, military junket in Burma, he has been in the top 10 worst governments for, I think, 9 years in a row. That's quite a record, isn't it? And I think what he's done this year, I think next year he may be the grand champion. I'll let you decide after the meeting tonight, because of his failure to warn the people concerning the cyclone. Nehemiah chapter 11 and verse 1. And the rulers of the people dwell at Jerusalem. And the rest of the people cast lots to bring one of ten to dwell in Jerusalem, the holy city, and nine tents to dwell in other cities. And the people blessed all the men who willingly offered themselves to dwell in Jerusalem. And then, through the rest of the chapter, it begins to name these people. And you know what I like about this chapter? When you read through the whole list of names, other than Nehemiah, you don't know one single name. I like that. You know what I call it? Willing unknowns. You see, today, if you could be a missionary and you could have your name in big lights, and if you could have tremendous results, everyone would want to be a missionary. But if you're a missionary and you're doing maybe a work that no one wants to do and no one hears about it, you're just an unknown. Wow, who wants to be a missionary? Tonight, before we're done, I'm going to introduce you to three or four willing unknowns in the Bible. I made a study recently on people whose names are not recorded in the Bible. And in Nehemiah, they had a problem because, you see, when they began to rebuild the whole city of Jerusalem, well, everyone said, wow, you know what, I'd rather live here, and I'd rather live here, because Jerusalem was completely torn down. And so they said, you know what, we've got to go in, and we've got to cast lots, we've got to find somebody who's willing to go to Jerusalem. About a year and a half ago, I had a man tell me, he said, I can't believe you're going to let your daughter waste her life in Burma. I said, boy, I'm not going to let her waste her life in Burma. Because you know what? What better way to spend your life than serving God somewhere? It wouldn't have to be Burma. It could be the Bahamas. It could be America. It could be China. There's a lot of places in the world, isn't there? And you know what? These unknowns, and rather than live in their houses that they chose to live in, they said, all the blessings of God are for Jerusalem. Someone's got to live in Jerusalem. And so they willingly offered themselves to live in Jerusalem. And it so struck Nehemiah, he records their names as willing unknowns. Boy, today, you know what? There's a lack of people that are willing to be unknown. You know what I mean? Everyone wants their name on the plaque. Everyone wants their name in the lights. Everyone wants to get the credit. And these people said, no, you know what? We'll populate Jerusalem. We'll do what God wants us to do. And if nobody knows our name, well, that's just how it's going to be. The urgency of missions. We need to be watchmen on the wall. We need to be willing unknowns. Now, let's take before we settle it in Burma, and Burma's over here by India and so on, and you'll see that in a moment, but I'm going to take you on another little trip, because there's a number of places that we want to go to, and so you'll see Bolivia is one, and Sudan is one. Matter of fact, someone said, I've noticed that every place that you're working, there's trouble, and that may give you an indication of how my life goes from time to time. China's another area. But one of the projects that we've been working on are Bibles for China. And as you know, the number 8 is a lucky number for the Chinese. They love the number 8. So that's why the Olympics are beginning on the 8th month, August. August the 8th, 2008, at 8 a.m. And there's 8 different cities where the Olympics are going to be held. And there's plenty of mess over there. Pollution's bad. I saw 130,000 people trying to get algae out of the canoeing thing. But you see, China is so excited about hosting the Olympics. Everything that has a Olympic emblem that they want. And gold is a wonderful color to them. Red and gold. Red's a lucky color. Gold's a lucky color. And so that's about 3.5 years ago, we decided to start printing Bibles with a gold cover. Brian Ford's going to be here the last Tuesday of July. And Brian Ford is a missionary to China. Joy and Brian, you're gonna really enjoy them. He'll tell you more about China, but this is a little project that 3.5 years ago we started. And you know what I heard? I heard that for every single Bible that you give out in China, that 1,000 people come to Christ. I think that's probably an exaggeration. Maybe it's only 100. Can you imagine that? And what if it's only 10? And so what if it's only 1? I don't know how many. But you see, there are many places in China where the Bible is so rare that when you give out a Bible, it could start a whole local church. It could start a whole revival in some places of China. And when the Olympics come, people are going to be flooding in because the Chinese government said there'd be no empty venues. Remember at the last Olympics, there were a lot of places where the stadiums were empty because it cost so much to see the preliminaries and so much to see all these events. Well, the people of China can't afford it, so the government said that we're going to try to sell all the tickets, and then any of the countrymen, any of the Chinese people that are around, they can come into to the Olympic Games free. So all the Chinese people are going to congregate to these eight cities, and so guess what? In these cities all over China, we've already put Bibles. Now, I'm not going to give them out because I look like a Westerner, don't I? But we have Chinese people all ready to distribute them. Matter of fact, in the 3.5 years of printing this, some of the people involved in this, you can only imagine what the government will do to them when they catch them printing Bibles. Can you imagine? Matter of fact, one of the people working on this, all of his fingernails have been removed. Yeah. And he continued to print Bibles. And you know what? I can't even pronounce his name. He's a willing unknown. You think God's going to bless that effort? And so, you know, I'm more excited about this Olympics than I've been about any Olympics that I could ever remember. Not because there's going to be records set, but because I think that 100,000 Bibles, and by the way, a million other pieces of literature, some of which you would know the English titles, all printed in gold, are going to be ready to go out. There's Brian and Joy. You'll meet him in person here in a little while. There's a project we're working on. This is Brother Martin. He works in Romania. And he works among the gypsy people. He's from Tennessee. He's a hillbilly Romanian. And he's married to a Romanian woman. He works with the gypsies. They're the poor people. They're the outcast of Romania. And in the last several years, what a joy as he's seen literally hundreds of them come to Christ and sometimes baptized in the river, even in the wintertime. They've had floods. They've had every kind of persecution you can ever imagine, and so often it's to give out literature, often to give out just basic food, and what a joy to see these people coming to Christ. Another young man is Gabe and Carrie. They work in Bolivia. In Bolivia, you know, there's a tremendous strike that's going on, and every despicable thing that can happen to a country is going on in Bolivia. And God continues to bless. Pray for their little family. Pray for their little daughter who has some problems right from birth and may require them to come home for a month or two. Gabe was raised in the assembly. His Myers is his name there in Paraguay. So you might be familiar with their family and the missions work there. And what a delight. In Sudan, as you know, the persecution that's gone on there. And through a very unique situation, we've had the good fortune of working with some of the people there. These are people, actually this picture was taken in Egypt as we were in Cairo, Egypt. Here are some people that were actually training them to go back and to teach in their school. But we were recently given some land, a building's got to be built in the next 10 years. And so these people are in Cairo. They're in Cairo because they're Africans. And so Egypt has to take them. We started a Christian school there because if they went to the public school, they had to study the Islamic religion. And so pray for them. We brought over a Christian curriculum and some of our students who have graduated from our school in Wichita are there working with them. This is what happens. This is a young man. There were four of them. Can't remember, four or five of the boys that were out on the field. When the Islamic soldiers came, they hid in the field. And three of them got away. This boy, they lit the field on fire knowing that the boys were hiding there in the grass. And he was burned. You can see the charred body. That's what happens when you're not a Muslim in Sudan. And so pray for them as they go back and very boldly start a Christian school. These are some of the boys in there. Matter of fact, one of them was murdered not too long ago, about a year ago, because he was not a Muslim. This is hanging outside the school. That looks pretty appetizing, doesn't it? Yeah. And then here's Pam and Zalman and little Zach. And they're actually in Israel in this particular picture. In Jerusalem, this is the Garden of Gethsemane. And but that's some of the missionaries. In Burma, last fall, there was a tremendous riot because fuel prices went up 500%. I don't know if they've got them that much here. But they've probably doubled or tripled, haven't they? Can you imagine how they went up 500%? They went up so high that people couldn't even afford to ride a bus. Now, I have a paper that shows the fuel line, and I'm going to pass around, but I really want to get it back. But you'll see, here's the fuel line, and the fuel line is 9 hours long because every other day you can get 2 gallons of gas. Okay, and so when you think that you have gas prices problems, well, remember there's some people, then look through the center there, because you'll see sometimes when cows die during the cyclone, they butchered them for meat. You can only imagine the problems there. So there was chaos in the streets, and the prices of not just fuel went up, but everything went up. Even the monks begin to complain, because the monks got their food by begging. They go around and they have a pot, and the boy monks wear a brown, kind of a brown cloth. The girl monks wear a pink one, and they go around and they beg food. And so people give them food. But food became so high priced. Rice was $9 a bag, and then it jumped up to $30 a bag, and then to $50 a bag. They couldn't afford it, because the average Burmese makes $1 a day. And so frequently, three or four families share an apartment. And then the whole building, maybe four or five stories high, they share one restroom, and it doesn't flush. It's a bucket. They share one sink. And so you can imagine the aspect of life there. And yet at the same time, they probably say, don't feel sorry for us, because there's some things that are wonderful there. These are concise Bibles. And by the way, this is a little sample of the Burmese language. That's Burmese. Around Pam's table, there's usually four languages that are spoken at any one meal. There's four different dialogues that they go on. But you can see it's a very unusual language, to say the least. But those are some Bible summaries we do. This is Power of the Cross and future books that are available, and in a variety of the languages there in Burmese. These are some of the other tracts. Some of them are Chick tracts. Some of those are other publications, all of them to present the gospel. You got to remember that to present the gospel is a tremendous risk. It's against the law to present the gospel in Burma. And so you have to make sure. And by the way, the government actually buys informants. Recently, it was against the law to help somebody out, to even give somebody rice. Their motto is, if you have a need, the government will supply it. So if the government caught you handing rice to somebody, you could be arrested. Matter of fact, movie stars were arrested because they felt so bad for the people. They got arrested. Their truck was taken away. Their rice was taken away. They were put in prison for helping other citizens. I mean, it's an incredible government, isn't it? So you can imagine their opposition to the gospel. So we have to be careful in regards to that. This picture doesn't show up real well, but this is a picture of one of the classes there at the school. And here's the whole school last year. This is Pam over here. And these are some of the teachers back here. I think Zama's taking the picture. And you can see the school. And the school's grown. Right now we have 75 students in the school. And they call it the Golden Land. That's a paradox, I'll tell you for sure. And but let's talk a little bit about food, because rice is the main food. Most people eat rice once or twice a day. It's unusual if you'd have meat more than once or twice a week. Very rare. We try to give the kids at the orphanage, for example, an egg once a week. And we try to give them some kind of greens. There's a weed that grows out on the side of the road, and we try to give them that and some kind of gravy. Their favorite thing would be to have pork. And so there's some rice being carried away. They only have what would be equivalent of $1 bills. So anytime you make a purchase, it's got to be with a whole truckload of dollar bills. A lot of people eat out on the street. There's, for the most part, there's not a kitchen in your apartment. And so you can go out on the street and makes you hungry just looking at that, doesn't it? I think they're going to serve that at the Gap tonight, a little later tonight. That's going to go. And here's a little girl on the street, and you can see what she's selling. Or maybe you can't figure that out. Take a closer look. You see what that is? That's a cricket or a grasshopper. And what you do, you just put that right there with your rice, and that gives you a little bit of protein with your rice. It's not so bad, is it? Julian's thinking about going over there right now. I can tell him as he licks his chops. And there's a lot of fruit. Now, there's makeup. They wear that because they think that makes them look beautiful. I'll let you vote on that later. And it also is a deodorant. But why would you put a deodorant on your cheeks? I'm not sure about that. But anyway, that's the style. Here's Kentucky Fried Chicken on its way. Some of the birds are alive when they started. I think they're all dead by the time they get there. but that's a pretty normal means of transporting items. This is also on the street, and this is hot sauce, so you take your chances on that. But if you look at that one, see if you can figure that out. It's a gray animal, got whiskers up here, got a long tail, it's got a stick stuck right up the rectum. And then what you do, you put it in this hot oil for a little while, cook it to your liking, and then you stick it in the hot sauce. I'm making you really hungry now. This is a kitchen on the road. Like I say, many people eat out, and so this is a pretty typical site where you might be able to catch a lunch or a dinner on the street. Here's Pam and Sharon buying vegetables from one of the fruit stands, and the ladies over there really know how to use their heads, and so they're walking along. That's a pretty typical street. And those of you that like wiring, take a look at that. There are no codes. Matter of fact, if one guy in the neighborhood gets electricity, the average just splits off from him. But you don't have to worry because they only have electricity. They average 1 or 2 hours a day of electricity. But the fruit there and the vegetables, it really is quite a sight and so enjoyable. And then this was one of the little boys at the school and orphanage. And believe me when I say they are delighted. Matter of fact, you probably say, where's the spoon? Where's the... Well, we give them those things, but they prefer to eat it with their hand. And that's a little bit of gravy that he puts on his rice. And just the fact that he'd be able to have a meal or two a day is good. This is a pig head. At the conference, at the Bible conference, they butchered the pig. They threw away nothing. So this is the head. They've cooked him. And so he'll become a special treat. And then there's the head being dipped into a pot, and that will become soup a little bit later on. And so it's always fun to see food from another country, isn't it? I mentioned there's 136 different people groups in Burma. And one of the exciting things, in addition to the school there, we have a number of other small schools throughout the countryside. And then we have actually great contact with 4 Bible schools. None of them are big. All of them 30 to about 50 students. But among this, we probably have Christian young people and probably 40 to 50 different people groups. Now, the reason this is important is because all these kids, when they come to Bible school, they can bring the gospel back to their own people. And how valuable that is, because you know what? I don't think there's any single person alive that can speak all 146 languages, and I don't think there's any single person alive that knows all the customs of all these different people. So I just introduce you to some of the people groups. Crazy things. Boy, what these people chew. And their teeth get all black and red, and I guess they think that's attractive. And wow. And so these are some of the people groups that are there. Some are way up in the jungle, in the hillside. Some are by some of the inland lakes and so on. This is part of the long neck people. They wear that because it protects them from tigers. I guess a tiger couldn't bite you in the neck or couldn't bite you in the ankle. And so what they do when they're young girls, they begin to wear these rings, and they're extremely heavy. They're a brass ring, and they put that on there, and every year they can, every time they can, they stick another ring on there so that eventually your neck gets stretched way out like that. We were actually there. We actually talked to these people and so on like that. And we have 2 or 3 of these people in one of the Bible colleges. While their aunts and grandparents wear the rings, they themselves are not wearing the rings, but they know all the customs there. And it's exciting to know that some of these people have actually come to Christ just recently as a result of these Bible college students. But you can only imagine, if they take the ring away, the muscles in their neck actually make it so their head flops down. So once they begin to wear it, they got to continue to wear it. I'm just saying the diversity of these people groups is just unbelievable. And then the men wear something called a longi. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. It may catch on around here, I don't know. But it's a piece of material, and you step in the middle, and you bring it up, and you wrap it around you, and tuck it in, and that's it. I say it's dangerous, because all it is a knot that holds it up. And so, you know, I don't know. But they wear it, and one size fits all. The knot's just bigger or smaller. And so there you are going across the countryside in your longi. But we go from cities. Yangon, I think, is about 7 million people. Does that sound right? 7 million people. And you go several hours north. And by the way, it's very difficult to travel there. For example, Zama is Burmese, but he has to check in every so many days with his land person. And when he gets there, he has to check in within 24 hours. He's got to check in with his land person. They want to know where you are every single night that you spend a night in Burma. Okay, it's a very closed and tough government. But these are some of the villages that are up in the countryside, and they're just very unique. The latched work is just fantastic. Matter of fact, we stayed in a hotel. This is out on stilts, and they got all kinds of things drying on the side of their place. There's some of these villages, they had no streets, only waterways. This is actually a hotel. And frankly, it was just spectacular. I mean, don't go in there and expect luxury, but it was just, you know, very unique to sleep out in a hotel that was suspended on stilts. And some of the bridges, excellent at weaving stuff. Their houses, many of the houses are made out of this, and especially in the countryside. And I say that because you can only imagine what a cyclone, see, what they call a cyclone, you call a hurricane. You can only imagine what a hurricane would do to this kind of a home. So these are some of the houses. These are some of the kids in the school. And these are actually some of the kids from the Delta area. And this picture was taken prior to the devastation of the cyclone. And then that's Azama, Pam, and little Zach. Continue to pray for them that God might use them in a special way there. And then what a disaster, because you see, as the cyclone came, the Burmese government made a decision not to warn their people. Even the Indian government said to Burma, you got to warn the people that it's coming. 150-mile-an-hour winds. And just since we were here, we watched a television special on BBC. And the lady who went into the Delta, she said at the close of her program, she said, now that the cyclone has occurred, she said, I wonder how many of the people that I interviewed in this special documentary, how many of them died during the cyclone? But here's a cyclone. And the United States government was so concerned for Pam and Zama that their phone was out, which is a normal thing, that they came and two times they made a personal visit to their home to tell them, hey, there's a cyclone coming. You got to prepare. And so Pam and Zama called school off on that Friday. And, of course, the Burmese people began to laugh at them. Even their friends said, that just shows you that the propaganda out of the United States is just so terrible. Because, see, in Burma you have two television stations, both government-run. And so all you see all day long is how good the army is, how great the general is, how wonderful all this is. And when the cyclone finally hit, do you know that no relief can be given out unless the general has put his signature on it or someone has stamped it with his name, because they want all the aid to be given credit to the general. Would you say he's a willing unknown? I'll tell you what. Well, there's the path, and this is the place where Zama and Pam live in Yangon, and this is the Delta area where the cyclone came. They estimate now that about 130,000 people were killed in the cyclone. Earlier they said that 1 million were homeless. They say now about 2 million are homeless. The world's worst health system before the storm, about 90% of the population lives on a dollar a day. Millions go hungry. A third of the Burmese children are already malnutritioned. And so these are headlines. They even say, is this time to invade Burma? This is the school. Now, can you imagine having a chance to go to a school like this? And matter of fact, these pictures were sent to us about 10 days before the storm. Pam and Zoma were so excited because they said the school looked so great. And wow, people are so excited about sending their kids there. A half a day in Burmese, a half a day in English. Every morning, the first thing you get is a gospel lesson. Every night when you're done, the last thing you get is a gospel lesson. And so we've had a number of the children, as well as their parents and even a grandparent, accept Christ as a result of the school
It's a great way to, this was the playground in the yard. And again, they were showing us how beautiful they had the whole thing set up. And then 10 days later, the cyclone came. And it was a mess. And I probably don't have to show you pictures to show you the devastation of it. But those are houses. And those bamboo houses just can't stand a cyclone of 150 miles an hour. And these are pictures. This village, not one single building was left standing. This is pretty common for them to have their drinking water here and their bath water here. But every single thing that this village had was destroyed. And this is one of the river areas. 6 weeks later, there were still dead bodies in there. How do you bury 130,000 people? Matter of fact, they think that there will be more people that will die from disease than died during the cyclone. And some of the workers that Pam and Zama had even working on the school and the house, one of them died of diarrhea just before we came. They would take out whole families. And as you do that, and Kyle will get ready to run the video here in just a moment. Here's the general. Here's his side men, decorated like that, decided not to warn. Can you imagine him as a watchman? Wow, I'll tell you what. I hope we as Christians do a better job. But Burma's dark disaster could be a bright path for the gospel. We looked at the willing unknowns in Nehemiah. And there's another one. There was a desperate widow in 2 Kings chapter 4, and she had debts and she had so many needs. And she went to Elisha, and Elisha said, okay, bring all the empty pots you can. And can't you see her saying to her boys, go and get empty pots. Now she had one little pan of oil. And by the time she was done, she began to pour oil out. And every single pot that she had got filled with oil. The limit to the blessing was not oil. The limit was how many pots she gathered. And you see, sometimes we look at missions or we look at our own needs and we forget that our God supplies in abundance, doesn't he? Keep that in mind as we look at this. And then the little captive girl, I think we'll skip her, Pharaoh's daughter. She was well provided for. But she saw a slave baby floating in the river and she had compassion. You know what? I find sometimes people that have God is blessed, they have compassion on the needy. Sometimes some of us say, well, why does God not treat me? You know what? God is a great protector and God's a great provider, even for those that God has blessed. And then there's the rare brother. It's interesting. Matter of fact, I'm going to read this to you as we get ready to watch a little video segment. But this is in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Listen to this. It says, but thanks be to God who put the same earnest care into the heart of Titus for you. For indeed he accepted the exhortation, but being very diligent of his own accord, he went unto you. And we have sent him with the brother. That's all it says, is the brother. Whose praise is the gospel throughout all the churches. Twice it mentions this man, never by name. It just says the brother whose praise is the gospel. Wouldn't you like to have that as a name? The brother whose praise is the gospel. A willing unknown. And so God often gets things done through this unique set of circumstances. Okay, we're ready for the video. The video that you're going to watch was filmed on the back of a motorbike. And it was taken out of Burma and sent to, it was sold on the streets. But they got into the Delta area. Before the government stopped even Burmese, Zama can't even go to the Delta area. Now, according to the Burmese government, everything has been taken care of. All the needs of the people are met. No more aid is even needed. I'll let you look at it and see. And so what we're going to do is we're going to watch about 10 minutes or so a video. But this is in the Delta, and this is filmed on the back of a bike. Some of this is going to look like a river, and some of it will actually be rice fields. And the quality is not good because, like I said, they're bumping on the back of a boat and on a bike. And all the narration is actually done in Burmese. And by the way, you'll notice this.
There's not one single general or military person in their hand at eight. All the aid you're going to see is going to be given by the people themselves, contrary to what the government wants. Here are actually people coming from other areas in boats to try to help out the people. And they were left homeless. We have one report where the government actually loaded up several hundred people, dropped them in a place where there was not one piece of food, not one piece of water, not one shelter, and said, okay, start all over again. But here are the Burmese people coming to try to help out some of those that are living in this area. And you'll notice that there's not a single leaf on a tree. You don't see a single home left. And if you don't have a strong constitution, you may not want to look at the next several minutes, because throughout this area, as you go, this is actually a rice field. That's a body right there. And that position, where it seems like when they die, their face turns dark, their fingers turn dark, their hands are kind of like this, up in the air. But you'll see that throughout this whole video. And I've got Kyle, so he's gonna flip through this. We're not gonna watch the whole thing. Then you'll see a water buffalo. And in the little newspaper that I passed around, they actually came in and began to butcher those. That's how hungry they were. And so you can imagine the disease that's gonna come as a result of that. Again, these are bodies. And so this is a government that decided not to warn their people and that they don't need help. Now, this is actually a rice field. If you look around, that's a field. I think they said they got over 30 inches of rain in a 36-hour period. And whole families are wiped out. Just prior to coming on this trip, I sent a copy of this to the ABC affiliate in our city, and they think that it's time to put this out in a public way, because for the most part, when the government there has said that everything's fine, people say, well, that's probably true. Everything is fine, and nothing could be further from the truth. The people are stunned. They're not sure what to do. They had no idea. Will help come? Will, and so some way to distribute food. Tin became extremely valuable. Matter of fact, some of the video I'm skipping, you'll actually see them out in the water fetching pieces of tin. The government limited you to 4 nails. When you went in, you could only buy 4 nails. What are you going to do with 4 nails? But virtually every roof was destroyed, and so it just became. You see here's some tin that people have. This is people. Lining up to get food, and I can only imagine the chaos that'd be in America if this is what you had to do. But again, you'll notice this is people helping people. and they're trying to do it without getting in trouble from the government. And so let me just tell you that, and with all of this, Pam and Zama say it's the brightest moment for the gospel. They feel like they're making hundreds of friends, thousands of friends. They have a generator. They're able to give them water. They had to go out to Thailand for a little while. They brought in medicine. Like I say, there's whole cities that every single person has diarrhea.